Hi, so yes, I'm Mrs. Underwood. I'm the new head of English here this year. So I've moved from a very similar school, a mixed IB grammar, across to Danecourt this year. So sort of picking up on the really good work that the department's done, as Miss Channing has said, it's a really strong department. A lot of the techniques that are already in place, the strategies that are already in place are proven to work. So it's kind of an honour to be at the helm and to try to take that forward. I didn't start in teaching. I started in advertising, in creative advertising, and then moved into teaching coming up to 10 years ago now. Mainly I've always loved English, and I think I knew I wanted to teach even prior to advertising really, but wanted to not just do the thing of school, university, back into school. So took a bit of a meandering route, as I've had my own children as well. I also have a 6-year-old, so again, in many ways I feel like she's already acting like a 16-year-old. And I have 2-year-old twins as well. So a meandering route, and then, yes, here I am now. It's been really interesting, actually, to see this particular Year 11 cohort and to get to know them in the capacity of Head of English. Obviously, I've taught many GCSE groups at this point, but you're very focused on your own group, obviously, as a classroom teacher, and you really nurture them. And it's been lovely to get to know them in a broader way, to understand how they work as a year group and to see the different dynamics and the different needs that there are as well across a broader spectrum of students. So I'm excited for them. Now is the best time to be talking about their GCSEs. I think they have it in their heads that they've got their PPEs first, and then after that is the time to panic. But obviously we don't want them to be panicking. We want them to be prepared as much as possible. So I think the earlier we can start that, the better. And really, are we doing it as a Q&A? Do you want me to just launch it? So I'll start with the first point anyway, and then I'll let Miss chip in with the questions. But it's to that point, what I want us or you to take away from this is just that importance of practice, and as Miss has said, that bite-sized practice so that it doesn't feel overwhelming. For any subject, I think having the motivation, the routine, to know that if you're practicing regularly, you're doing your future self a service, aren't you, essentially? If we're setting aside a couple of 20-minute sessions a week for English, for another subject that we're struggling with, we are going to not be in that situation where we experience that panic nearer the time. And for English, yes, there is content to be learned for literature, but with a language focus, the best thing that they can do is to identify those questions that they particularly struggle with and practice. So that's kind of the real nugget of what I want us to take out from today, and then obviously we'll talk through some specific strategies for different questions and needs.
I wonder whether that bears out actually with our more authentic learners, our younger learners here. Do you find that practice was the most important thing for English? Because we talked in our science Q&A about sort of flashcards and sort of retrieval. It doesn't always translate over to English. If you had to say anything to these beautiful people here about how best to support their child's revision, from your perspective, what would that be?
I would say probably it is practice. A lot of GCSE questions, they are kind of repeated over a few couple of years. You end up having the same questions, and even if they go, oh, this won't come up on your exam, it might. We had that instance where it was, I forgot the name of the poem, but it was this really long poem, and all our teachers said, no, this won't come up because it's too long and people won't have enough time. And there it was on my GCSE paper. And I remember sitting there and going, wow, that is not what they said originally.
I mean, I don't think their next time, I'm sorry, I don't think my last answer will come up again. I don't think the young people, I mean, that's absolutely wrong. But we said the same to you last year, didn't we? Absolutely.
Yeah, so, but I feel like even though I did kind of have that think of, oh wow, it did actually come up, what am I going to do? Because we had gone through it and I had practiced it at home, and, you know, even if they say, oh, it might not come up, there's always that thought in the back of your child's mind, oh, it could come up. And it's just mentally preparing yourself for any kind of question that can come up, because although it might be an easy question, it won't be easy marks. So you have to put as much down as you can in order to help yourself get those 4 marks. And the best way to do that is by writing the same thing down over and over again, checking it, making sure that it will get you into that top band. Because once you're in that top band, you can't move out of it again, which means that you're ensuring the best marks that you possibly can for your exam, which is obviously the best for your grade. So I feel like it's just reminding yourself with all those key terms, and all, even if you find new terms, using them over and over again to make sure that you understand the context and can therefore even take them into a different exam. And, you know, like the teacher said, I think it is just practice that does make perfect, because, you know, once you know something, you just remember it just like that in your exam, and it's almost like clockwork. And it just makes the exam run so much smoother with so less stress. And you end up leaving that exam not thinking, oh, what did I write? Oh, no, it's going to end up horrible. Being like, I did the best that I could, and I wrote down everything that I knew. And in turn, that helps you, you know, write the exam best, because you're not thinking about how much time is on the clock. You're thinking about what you can write.
Can I ask you a searching question on this then? So obviously students don't like doing practice. Like, you guys didn't like doing practice. Like, no one likes writing full exam papers. They don't. And yet you're telling me, and we're saying, and the research tells us that that's the most important thing for English. What do you think about, like, essay plans? So you may hear from your young people, oh, I haven't got time to do a full essay, but I'll do an essay plan. Now, is that effective in your view, or is that not effective? I have no agenda here. I don't know the answer. I'd be interested to hear what you said. Laurie, what do you reckon? Like, essay plans as opposed to full essays, is there a merit to that?
I think that having an essay plan, what that's actually good for is just working out what you think about a particular poem or piece of work, and just, like, knowing what your sort of things that you could say, but it's not good for, like, sort of knowing how to write. I think the thing that a lot of people struggle with is knowing, you know, okay, well, I know that, you know, I think that my life's actually about, you know, this, this and this, but I don't know how to communicate that. And if your kid is struggling to communicate it, then actually just writing out the essay is the important bit. And I think just, like, getting them to consider that, and also considering, you know, which poems do I, you know, or which sort of, you know, book do I find most difficult? I mean, that's across all subjects, you know, which bit is the most difficult? Get them to practice that more, because that's the bit where they need more practice. Like, get them to, you know, actually kind of write down, you know, for geography, these topics are the most difficult, for English, these are the most difficult, so that they can focus on that, because having that focus is really important. And I think probably a whole essay is better, because it like allows you to just kind of work out the kind of rhythm of writing. And I think also doing it under the timed conditions as well, so that you make sure that your child isn't sort of taking too long, and then when they get into the sort of real thing, you know, they can't write as much as they needed to.
Just to sort of pick up on what you said there, that what I've identified, and I'm sure, I hope that Miss will say the same, even just with my own group, there seem to be two things. It's worrying about what to say. So they're given a particular question and they spend too long thinking about what on earth they're going to say. And then the other thing is the timing, which links with that, doesn't it? But then actually how much they can get done in the time. And I know that some of the additional questions that came in from you guys were around that. How on earth do I get more marks in the time for my child? So what we're trying to do as a department, and this is quite literature specific, is we're actually developing these pocket-sized essay plans for them. And if they go away and they learn those plans, we're removing one of those obstacles. They should go in knowing exactly what they're going to say, and we've almost spoon-fed them those plans and the order in which to write it.
I think don't sort of say, you know, you must go with this plan the school has given you. Like, let them kind of add in their own bits to it, because if they've got things that they personally understand about the work in there, it will show through, and, you know, they will write better than just a kind of thing that's been fed to them, I think.
One thing that I wanted to say, I'm sorry, unlike the science, I actually know a little bit about English being an English teacher, and so I've got to sort of rein myself in here, but one thing that we were discussing prior, two things, one about the timing, which we'll come back to in terms of language, but what really sets our students apart, based on the fact that I've examined for the AQA for the last 3 years, and we've got lots and lots of colleagues that have done the same, obviously you mark from across the country, our students really know how to write. So speaking to your point earlier about essay plans, a practical thing that you could do once they've completed that essay plan, okay, so talk me through it, like, orally dictate an essay to me, And if you don't understand half the words, but they make sense, then that's great, okay? Because, again, practically, marking up 225 paper twos last year, if I came across one that could write academically, you'd be in the minority. You really would be. So that academic phrasing, used as a means to explore, you know, epitomises, manifestation, embodiment, all of these words that we teach your young people, if they can orally sort of, I don't know, express that essay plan to you in a way that you go, oh, if we were at a dinner party, that would be really impressive. Mm-hmm. I think you're really intelligent. That's half the battle, okay? Because practically, mm-hmm. it is as much about style as substance in English, in my view.
I agree. And I think that's also good for if your children fall in under the category of those who lack in confidence and so write a bit and then just stumble and just don't know what to say next. Sometimes getting them to talk it through makes them realise that actually they do know what to say, and it feels less committal, doesn't it, than putting pen to paper. So I think it's also useful for those who have those blockers as well. And the HOD mentoring, the head of department mentoring that I've been doing, that's the case for so many of them. The knowledge is in there, but committing it to paper, they just can't seem to do it. But once they've talked it through, suddenly then they do feel more able to commit those thoughts to paper.
Can I just add one more thing? I'm sorry. I'm really focused on sort of practical takeaways. I'm desperate for you to have three or four things that you could trial moving forward from this session. So another thing that we do with our Year 13 students to help to sort of clarify their thinking process is essentially you could follow that model through. They could do an essay plan, then they could orally dictate that to you, and then you could write down what you perceive as the main points of that. And then you go, right, did you mean to foreground these things? Because this is what I heard when you spoke. And that's a really useful way of, one, then matching it up with their original essay plan, and two, okay, well, maybe I'm actually not expressing this in the clearest way than I was intending, you know. So on the back of a takeaway carton or whatever, a newspaper, as they're speaking around the kitchen table, just going, okay, so these are the things that I'm perceiving that you're telling me. Does this match up with your actual thought process? And that would be a way of sort of pulling it full circle so they could go, okay, so what I'm planning is not being communicated, or what I'm planning is actually not strong enough and I need to go back to that. Just an idea, potentially.
I think sort of to that point, so not disagreeing, but there's maybe an assumption that there's a level of knowledge or ability or comfort, right, in talking about literature with with your young person, which not everyone would feel. I know that my parents weren't remotely academic, and so if I'd asked them to do that when I was younger, they would have really struggled with that. So I think getting them to do the practice, and then just the discussion, but you not having to do anything off the back of it, will still help to clarify their own thoughts. So even if you're just asking them to talk through what they did in that 20 minutes and you don't have any input, they are still going to then be doing that process of reflection and thinking, oh, okay, actually, I could have included that because that's what I've just thought of in our discussion as well. So,
should we go to... Okay, so if you could recommend only one or two approaches to English revision, what would they be? I mean, we've spoken about practice, but is there anything else?
I think just to focus on language specifically for a moment, it's returning back to those questions in loops, so making sure that you are working your way through questions 2, 3, 4, going back to question 2 again, so we're returning to it, that's practice. But also, there really is a structure that they can follow, a formula that they can follow for many of those language questions, which they would have been taught in class. So using those mnemonics, for example, we use SQIC for one of them, which means statement, quotation, inference, comparison. Just really learning those formulae, so that they go in there and can immediately apply it. The other thing is, which we've already said, identifying where your weaknesses are. But with language, that comes with some caveats. So for the reading section, so the language papers, you have a reading section and a writing section, and I'll speak to writing separately. But for the reading section, there are two shorter mark questions, one on each paper, which every single year nationally students struggle with. And they spend so much time trying to tackle those questions because they're anomalies, they're different skills to what they have to do everywhere else, that then they might gain an extra mark or two on that, and then they run out of time for the longer mark answers. So for language, I would say do not spend too much time on question 2 of paper 2 and question 3 of paper 1, and really focus those energies on the higher mark questions. So practice, but in a strategic manner, using the mnemonics, using the structures, and really putting their energies into those higher mark questions as well. Of course. So the ones to not worry too much about, question 2 for paper 2 and question 3 for paper 1.
Do you remember those ones? Do you remember the summary question and the structure question?
Absolutely not.
Well, that's good. That's what you should be, because you shouldn't be focused on
time.
No.
It's like...
Once it's gone, it's gone.
Once it's gone, it is gone. Because it wasn't that they were difficult in any way, but I think I personally struggled with structure more than I did language, because I could talk for hours about what the metaphor means, what the simile means. But as soon as it's like you have to talk about the zoom on the character and the shift in tone, and that's where I kind of struggled. So I think, like, you know, everyone was saying, you know, keeping it, putting myself in that timed manner where I only had, I mean, what was it recommended, 16 minutes?
12 minutes.
Yeah. 12 minutes. And kind of making myself, forcing myself really, to kind of think about how do I improve on this. I think that's kind of what carried me there, because I was always worried about that question in particular, and kind of, you know, like the teacher said, giving the children acronyms to learn, to kind of have a structure to follow for those questions, just made my life so much easier, because I cannot tell you the amount of times I spent looking at a question through being like, so what are they asking me to do? But instead, once I got into the exam room, it was kind of like, okay, I know what I have to look for in the text. And that just makes it easier, because then while I'm looking at structure, I can also look at language, you know, and then kind of tackle, you know, two birds with one stone. It just made my life so much easier, especially with, you know, question two, because, you know, like as Miss said, squid, you know, it just fish, bash, bosh, question up. And then you can move on to question three, and then you even maybe have some extra time for, you know, question four in your writing section.
It's that prioritising, isn't it? As you say, sort of using the structures, but just prioritise where the marks are, basically. And if those are the ones that they're going to spend too long worrying about for not that many marks, let's be strategic and not spend time practising them. Spend time practising where you're more likely to pick up the marks, which are the other questions.
So what should a student do, or who should a student ask, so who should your young people ask if they have a problem that they don't know how to answer?
I think your first port of call is always your teacher, your specific class teacher. They know you best, really, and they'll understand from the work that they've marked as well where the weaknesses lie. Failing that, can come to me, so come to the head of department if it's a question that they feel they still don't quite have a good answer for. Online resources are good, as Miss has said, for English as well. So Mr. Brough for both literature and language online. His videos are so easy to follow and really go step by step, don't they, through all of the questions. So if there's a specific question that they're still unclear on, Mr. Brough online is a good one. And actually, I'll give these sheets out, and you've got the links to his page as well, his YouTube page. But yeah, really, first port of call should always be the class teacher, and then second to that, myself.
Can you think about anything practically that you did for English, or indeed revision in general, that might benefit these parents here?
I think for me, I found this website, which I actually still use to this day, and it's called Sparks Notes. Mm. And if you just look up any kind of text, so let's say, for example, A Christmas Carol Sparks Notes, it will kind of, if your child is having trouble kind of analysing where the key points are within the book, or trying to get the context, the full context, because, you know, context marks are very easy to get, really. It kind of helps with that, and it takes you through step by step. Oh, where did this come from? Oh, okay, this was Dickens' background, that's why he might have written this. And it just kind of helps understand the book more, because once you understand the book more, it's so much easier to write about it, because you kind of understand, oh, why he did this or why he did that.
And actually, linked to Spark Notes is No Fear Shakespeare as well. I don't know whether you guys use that, but if you have a student who really struggles with accessing the language in Shakespeare, they give you a modern translation literally alongside it. Now, the caveat with that is that they can't then start quoting the modern translation, which some of them do. But if there's a particular section that they know they really struggle with, that is also quite a good resource. It lets you go straight to the scene that you are struggling with. So No Fear Shakespeare would be a good one. And I think it's Spark Notes that produce those as well, so linked to that.
So, Florrie, anything else?
I'd say that if your kid has, like, doesn't like their English teacher and thinks, oh, my God, I can't talk to them.
I don't want to,
it's too scary. Just say, go and talk to another English teacher you think is going to be more helpful. Like, it'll be fine. And just, like, say, you know, go talk to someone else, you know. whoever that might be.
I suppose, well, we can't talk to personal relationships, I suppose. The PC version of what you just said, which is absolutely true, is Year 11 are our priority. Across the school, Year 11 are our priority. It's a moral obligation for us to make sure that your young people have the right GCSEs and the right IB levels to be able to make informed and sort of wide choices. That's an act of love, in my view. So I suppose you're right in that we're all sort of pulling in the same direction. So anyone would be, and also we're geeky, you know, we love talking about English, you know, to anyone and everyone, you know. So I think you're right. I think that. And also,
any teacher will be sort of happy to help. It's Year 11.
Could we talk about setting in this?
Absolutely. So after their PPE, shortly after Easter, they will be set for 5 out of their 8 lessons. So at that point, they may well have a different teacher for 5 of their lessons and remain with their ordinary class teacher for the other 3. The setting is mostly content input, I suppose. So the language reading practice will remain with their normal class teacher, whereas the setting is more literature focused and also creative and persuasive writing as well for language. And whilst I'm on that note, I suppose the creative and persuasive writing is so much more important than it appears, I think, because it's just one question. And they sometimes see writing, and tell me if you guys disagree, but I think sometimes you can see writing when you get to Year 11 as something you did way back when in Year 7 and Year 8 that is no longer as important. But it's worth half of the marks in the language papers. So your reading section with all of those questions is worth 40 marks, and then you have a whole 40 marks for the writing piece. So that is where the success of this department really has come from in the past, is having a real focus on that writing practice. Now, all of the students should have drafted their creative writing already or be in the process of finishing that off, and they should learn that before they go into the exam. So then they know that they've got a piece of work. We're playing the system a bit, but it works. So they've got a piece of work that we have checked that is of a certain standard. They go in there, they reproduce it, they're going to get brilliant marks. And if you look at the data from last year, coming from a school that didn't do that, that didn't draft the creative writing before, the marks out of 40 are unbelievable. The averages are so high. So that really works. So they definitely should put their energy into that. And then the persuasive writing, they can't draft, they don't know what the topic's going to be, but they can learn the writing frameworks and practice. So that's really important as well. And I can't really remember the point that got me to that question, but yes, or got me to that answer. But definitely the writing should be a focus.
Could we ask you guys whether you did that and the success that you found? Because that is something like a model that potentially is slightly different to other schools, as you've just pertained to. Did you do that? Did you memorise your creative writing? Did you sort of throw it up onto a page, and did it work out well for you? So maybe.
I found that really helpful, particularly when we get to go and talk to our teachers one-on-one. This is the changes I made. What do you think? I'm not sure if I like the first version. Do you like the second version more? It was so helpful, and we did that over a really long period of time. So we got to slowly learn rather than pushing all of this information just on ourselves. So really gradual build up, I think, and it made it so much more easy to reproduce that. And in class as well, we practice this against different types of exam questions, so we get to edit what we've done. So if the stimulus was like a picture of like a dawn, we could use the symbols of sunset and put that into what we've already wrote, and that practice was really, really helpful for me. And when it came to doing practice exams outside of school, it was just so easy, so straightforward, because I just knew what I was doing, I knew what to expect. And when it came to the actual exam, I was really relaxed about it, because I knew what I was going to do.
You kind of know that you have half of that paper in the bag, don't you, going into it. It is a no-brainer, and like I say, I can't believe that more schools don't do it, really. But so, and I remember now, the question that got me onto that was setting. So that is something that they will also be set for, so that they can really refine both of those pieces of writing depending on the level that they're aiming for. On that note, revision in class should start from next week, really. So we're starting to move on from content input now into revision. And then really at home they should again, they should be starting from now. One of the questions was, when should they begin? And as we've already alluded to, start as early as possible, but build it up. So now it might only be a couple of 20-minute sessions a week, and then they'll gradually build it up and spend more time as they get closer to the exams as well.
So we talked a little bit about the various different topics that students can revise from. Obviously, we have five literature-based and then four reading writing for both papers, so that makes four in total. How would you advise that students manage their like topic input? How would you...
As in the content input, what should they prioritise? So writing, as I've said, so writing should absolutely be a priority. The higher mark answers for language... Again, absolutely their priority rather than those lower mark answers. And again, just to reiterate, not focusing too much on those two tricky questions that take up too much time. In terms of literature, it's really student dependent. It just depends on where they are at and which text they feel most comfortable with. What I've got for you, which all of your children will have seen because they're part of a classroom, a whole year classroom on Google Classroom, I've got our revision plan that we're offering. So we are doing sessions on a Tuesday after school for literature and for language, and also Wednesday lunchtimes. And within the plan you can see specifically which questions are going to be covered which week. So again, if they're able to identify that they really struggle with question four on paper one, they should make sure that they attend that session. And then similarly for literature, if they know that they really struggle with Much Ado, make sure that they're going along to those sessions. So for language, you can be a bit more strategic. For literature, it's much more dependent on the individual.
Yeah, and I just want to say, those revision sessions with the teachers do really help, because instead of, I guess for me personally, I found it way easier to just stay at school for an extra hour than to go home and then having to, you know, sit down and think, oh, do I really want to revise? Say, no, I can revise tomorrow. But then kind of having the... it kind of catch up with me being like, I should have really revised. So it kind of just helps them realise that they have done some revision today and kind of take some of that pressure off that comes with revising. Because, you know, my mum was like, oh, you should be revising all the time. But, you know, I kind of felt pressured to do it. But it kind of, like I said before, kind of takes that pressure off. And I will just say, Miss Channing did bribe us with donuts.
Only in the latter stages. She's not made of money.
Only in the latter stages, but I mean, they did encourage.
It's like the hot chocolates on a Wednesday. Hot chocolates on a Wednesday.
You know, there are other schools in the local community that are set aside period sixes. So they from now, they start sort of forcing students, but extending the school day for year 11. Now, we're not in the business of doing that. Your young people may have other things to do in the evenings, but I think that speaks to what you're saying, this idea that once you're here, you're in that mind frame, and you can go home lighter. The pressure's off you to some time extent there, because anything you do over and above those revision sessions is purely optional. So I don't know whether Miss Jessamine has communicated this with you specifically. I hope she has. We have an overview. It's a massive document, and basically your young person can, if they choose to, no expectation at all. It's not a period six. They can stay behind most sessions after school happening every single day of the school week. So yeah, I think that's really important that you guys are aware of, not as an expectation, but as an offering there.
So would that constitute the whole week's worth of revision, they say, for one session?
It depends on how you want to play it with your child. I would say that it would certainly constitute that evening's revision. Yes, it would. I mean, in terms of, if you're being completely honest, those three 20-minute sessions, or the three half-an-hour sessions would be covered in their majority. I think if I was a parent, I'd probably say, right, okay, so you don't have to do any more revision tonight, but you might want to consider doing two additionals another time. So essentially the whole point of it is, and the reason why we slap the three half-an-hour numbers in, is because the EEF tells us that that's the most sort of valuable time period for revision. I don't know about you guys, but I used to sit down in front, especially in university, sit down in front of my computer and sort of spend 8 hours and do like less than 30 minutes actual work there. So that's what the EEF tells us in terms of like the most valuable time periods. But the aim of the game is really to get them to value that revision, I suppose. And it's an impossible concept. How do you get a student to value revision? But it's about sort of speaking to what I said at the beginning of the session, making those habits really non-confrontational at this point. So by the time, because there will be a moment where I stand up in front of your young people, probably around March, April, and go, right, now needs to be an hour every night after school, or an hour three times a week, or whatever. And if they've done nothing, if they come into that cult, that feels insurmountable, that feels too much, and that's fair enough. It would for me, I think. So it's just about sort of drip feeding this sort of the expectation, the routine to get them revising where possible.
And I think just to jump in there, that yes, on paper that looks like it should equate to the same amount of time, but obviously the way our brains work, you need to keep returning to things to remind our brain that it needs to encode it into long-term memory. So if they've done that hour's revision, say on a Christmas Carol on Tuesday evening with Miss Channing, and then on Saturday they set aside 20 minutes to try to just on a blank piece of paper write down everything that they can remember from that session, that is going to be more valuable than just leaving it there. So I think even if you run it that way and you say to them, and you know they've gone along to a session 3 days ago, right, you've got 15 minutes, write down everything that you can remember and then check against your notes any things that you've missed, that's going to mean that hour has had so much more weight than if you just left it there and you didn't return to it at all.
Could you just reiterate the days and the times of...
Of course, it's all... I've got it all here, but it's Tuesday after school, essentially, for English, yeah. And literature and language do run at the same time just because all of the subjects have sessions running and we couldn't clash with other subjects, but we're running sessions twice, basically. So if they go to a literature one and miss a language, they can do that language session later. And then Wednesday lunchtimes, which I just yell at them all in the plaza to go along to and hope that they listen. But it's the Tuesday after school for you guys to know about, really. But we've got them here.
We've spoken to some of these already, so things like time management and sort of spending too much time on irregular questions or low-scoring questions. But in general, are there any barriers? I suppose this is a question for actually Miss Underwood, but also you guys as well. What barriers are there to students being as successful as possible, in your view?
I think in terms of barriers, it's the timing for me is the biggest thing. So I think so many of them have the knowledge and the willingness to do well, and then they just can't get down the content that they need in the time. And language is more of a problem for that than literature, I would argue, because they have so many questions to get through. So I'm repeating myself really here, but that's where they need to be strategic and think, I know that I'm one of these people who just can't write two pages in 20 minutes, let's make sure that I'm spending my time on the questions that are worth the most marks. But definitely for language reading, it's the timing that does so many students that scuppers them. So it speaks to the practice and it speaks to being strategic again with those questions. Would you guys agree that that's the hardest part with language, the fitting everything in the time available?
Yeah, I'd say it's like if you kind of look up at the... Well, I mean, what I did was I basically, when I got into the exam, I wrote down, you know, these are the times I'm going to, you know, spend on each question. I'm going to do, you know, 10 minutes on this question, 15 minutes. And I wrote down, OK, I started this question at 11:05, and then I look up at the clock and I see, OK, it is now 11:15. I'm going to wrap this up, even though I've got more that I would say. I'm going to sort of do a little conclusion and I'm just going to move on. I'm going to accept sort of losing some marks because I know that it's not worth kind of carrying on. So it's just like saying to them, like, just accept that you're going to lose some marks on a question and just moving on would be the thing I'd say for kind of exam technique. It's just kind of letting it go. And if you've got time at the end, you know, maybe like leave a bit of space on the paper and come back to it, but don't sort of keep going on it and sort of thinking, oh, I can get in the points that I want to, you know, with just a few more minutes.
And actually, to that point, we'll give suggested timings for each question, so 12 minutes for an 8 marker, so on and so forth. But, and tell me again if you guys disagree, but if you know that you just never do well on the structure question, and we're saying, well, it's 8 marks, so you can give yourself 12 minutes, don't give yourself 12 minutes and add that time where you think you're more likely to pick up the marks. So those timings aren't going to be the same for every student. You might well find that they need to have an extra 5 minutes on the 12 marker or the 16 marker where they're more likely to do well. But that's really good advice to write it down.
Can I ask whether or not you did the questions in order?
No.
I think I probably did do it in just the normal order, yeah.
Because there is sort of various different models as well. And this is not helpful for you guys. Because it's not like you're... And again, I think it's really important we are a really valuable resource in the English department. We're all geeky, we can talk about it. Like, so students have started to approach me now from my English class and go, can I just have 20 minutes of your time at lunchtime? And I'll bring my lunch in, they'll bring their lunch in, and I'll say, right, you're rubbish at this, you're good at this, you're rubbish at this. So sometimes kids need to, they're not very good, well, none of us are very reflective, are we? So be annoying to your class teachers, genuinely. You know, ask your young people to seek them out and go, okay, so I'm not quite sure, I've got, I'm underperforming relatively in language, but I don't really know what to do about that. So sit down with, your teacher can tell you in 20 minutes, and the one-on-one is sometimes more powerful than doing it in a whole group session. Coming back to what I was saying before, though, so with my young people, I teach them to do 5, get it out the way, because often one of the things that
the creative writing,
because they already know it, the exam board expects you to take 45 minutes on it. But if they've learnt it, they can write it and it's perfect in 25 minutes. Like, that is another sort of hidden advantage to this, is the fact that it removes some of those barriers from timing. So I personally teach them to do question 5, then question 1, 4, 2, 3. And the reason why I do that is because 1 is really easy, 4 marks. 4 is a 20-mark question. Sorry, this means nothing to you, but essentially what I'm trying to say is that there are different ways to skin the cat, you know. And then obviously ending with 3, because 3 is often the one that the kids spend far too much time on. That's the structure question that Miss was talking about earlier. And it kind of it stops them from spending too much time. Yeah. So they've only got 10 minutes left, so you can't spend too much time. Did you do it in that order, or did you do it in a separate order? And if you remember, it's very difficult to remember, I'm sure.
I did it slightly differently. So I consider myself quite a creative person, so even when it was, I've written this thing about a girl with a snow globe or whatever, and technically she was in some zoo, but I kind of could make it work with what I was saying, so I could kind of change things, so it didn't take me as long, and because, you know, we'd already learned it and it's kind of been fed into us, I could basically put it out onto the paper in 20-25 minutes. After that, I did question 4. I can't really remember what question 4 was about, but all I'm...
So for perspectives, it's comparing writers' perspectives, and then it's responding to a statement for the other paper.
Because it was the next big marker, and, you know, it was still just kind of just... I can still get as many marks as I can with this to kind of, you know, help me with my grade. Then I did question 2, because it was just squish, easy, got it out. And then I actually did question 1 last, because I felt like... when it says, you know, list 4 things in paragraph 1 about the character in the snow, I'd already read so much of the text at that point. I could just basically remember whatever was happening in the first paragraph. And that might not be the same for your childhood, you know, because every order is different. But for me, that was kind of how it worked in my brain. And then obviously I did question 3, because I felt like I still needed to give myself some time, although not as much time as, you know, I should for other questions. I still felt like I needed to, you know, with all the revision that I'd been doing, I was like, you know what, I'm not gonna let myself, you know, get down by this. I'm gonna take it over. You know, just kind of get myself to that redemption point. And I felt like I did do that. I'm quite proud of myself. but then again, because, you know, question 1 is only 4 marks. So even if, you know, your child does do it the way that I do, but maybe they only get 3 points out of the 4, it is just that 1 mark that they have lost. And it's not as big a deal as, you know, getting to that, let's say they're doing question 2. And maybe they could have got 2 extra marks or 3 extra marks because I didn't say that right thing. You know, and it kind of just hurts a little less because you're like, oh, well, you know, if I was in the exam room, I would have got better. Probably. But I think it's just that. And also the confidence is really where it lies with your child. If they're confident in other questions, they should tackle them on as soon as possible, because then they can basically, it makes you feel better about the entire paper. Because, you know, I've done so well on question 5, done so well on question 3, 2, what, you know, question 1 will be a breeze, or question 3 will be a breeze. And it kind of just helps them keep that stamina. Because the paper is 1 hour 45.
Correct.
2 hours. And it feels a lot longer. When I look back on it, obviously it feels so much shorter, but when you're in that room, sat in that chair, seeing all these other people write, it kind of makes you feel a bit worried, I guess, in some cases, because, you know, if your child is not as confident in exam rooms, kind of looking around and seeing everyone on your corner just writing and looking so focused, and you're sat there and you're like, what am I going to do? It kind of makes you feel less confident, because then you're thinking, oh, well, they're going to get more marks than me, so what's the point of me even trying? But you can try, because at the end of the day, there are thousands of kids doing the same paper. So it's not just, you're not the only child in that situation, which may feel a bit harsh, but there is a point. But it kind of makes you feel like you're not alone, and therefore you can actually do it, and you can succeed. And then when they see that grade, you know, the grade, whatever they may get, it kind of makes them feel like, wow, I put in the work, and this is what I got, and I'm proud of myself.
So I think what that speaks to really is just in terms of the order in which to tackle the questions, you go with where you're most confident, don't you? So we'd advise to do the writing first because it's worth so many marks. And then we would say to do the longer answers that are worth more marks. But equally, I've got a pupil in my class who, for various reasons, he just knows that he won't get to the point where he's able to write enough to get 12 marks, but that he can do really well on the couple of 8-mark questions. So, and he did that in his mocks. And it served him well and he jumped a couple of grades. So they need to know their own strengths. And I think Eniola's right. Then if they're starting with their strengths, it's putting them in a good mindset for the rest of the exam.
Absolutely. I'm really conscious of the time and I'd like to have a little bit of time for any sort of questions that you might have. I'd like to hand over to our Year 12 team now. I've sort of prepped them with a couple of questions. Have we covered most of them, Eniola?
I believe we've covered some of them.
Okay. So I just wanted to hand over because, you know, it's all well and good talking to us. I did my, not even IB levels, I did my A levels a million years ago. You guys actually were successful last year. That's the reason why you've been picked to do this. Would you mind sort of sharing some of your experiences, sharing some of your sort of hacks that maybe we're not aware of? And
yeah, sure. For me, a big problem with my GCSEs is that I wasn't particularly motivated. I find the IB actually easier in some ways because I'm studying what I want to be studying. And the problem with GCSEs is you've got 10 subjects that you don't necessarily like, but there is so much pressure to have to study them. So I found that making revision really fun, or like trying new cafes, or doing like picnics in the park with my friends, or even just like watching the David Tennant and Catherine Tate version of Much Ado About Nothing with my mum really worked because my mum was like revising with me. I was relaxing with the content, so I sort of, I could relax more in the exam that way rather than looking at a piece of paper and going, this is what I have to do. Watching the films, like just relaxing, being more passive with the content, getting to know it better without the pressure. I probably single-handedly pay Cafe Nero's rent. not necessarily that you have to go out, but like changing rooms in the house, like trying the dining room, the kitchen, living room. Bedrooms are a really difficult place to revise in because you just don't want to be there. You want to go to bed. You want to be doing anything else. So I would say certainly don't revise in your bedroom. If you have a desk, move it out of the bedroom into another room, or just try loads of different places and find where your child gets more comfortable. Also, my mum helped me revise so much. She practiced for her interview whilst I was doing some English revision, which was really handy. It's like revising with a friend. So I would say try and encourage your child to make it more fun, because that is such a good motivator.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't bother going for the fun. I thought to myself that, you know, I don't particularly care about biology, but at this point it's a means to an end because I'll get a high score, you know, I'll get the good grade, and then I can do what I care about after that. And I found that actually just like not having my phone in the room was the biggest thing. You know, I was in my bedroom when I did revision, but just if I don't have my phone there, I haven't got, you know, that kind of, you know, instant kind of, oh and I'm going to relax, you know, for just a few minutes, which then turns into sort of longer and longer times, is, you know, you just have to kind of sit down with it, you know, I found, and sort of get rid of, you know, your phone. And I also, what I did was I spent a couple of days just at the beginning working out what my sort of timetable of sort of revision stuff was going to be. So I knew, you know, I'm going to, on this day, you know, Tuesday the 7th of March, you know, I'm going to be revising history and I'm going to do, you know, the Cold War. And so I spent a few like a couple of evenings just kind of working that out broadly of when I'm going to revise certain topics. And I found that really helps because it means that I didn't kind of get stuck on one particular subject that I sort of knew and that I could kind of cover everything. Like, don't let your... I mean, unless it's going to be really helpful to them, don't let your child, like, sort of spend lots of time with pretty colours. I think it's, you know, it's going to end up just sort of taking up revision time. I mean, if also possible, like, let them kind of go on a bit of a rant about, you know, about a subject just to explain it to you. And also, like, kind of tell them or kind of, you know, sort of suggest to them if they're getting stuck with a particular topic, okay, leave it for now, go and talk to a teacher and just move on, because it's not worth kind of staying with it for so long that you don't get to do other things.
Just to sort of combine what you've both said about the fun and the just get it done and get the phone out of the room, something that I still do now when I'm marking papers is I will put a timer on my phone outside the door in a different room, and I'll set myself 3 minutes per paper so that I know that when that timer goes off, I've somehow drifted off and I've not kept on task. And then every 10 papers, I'll be allowed to go and eat a slice of cake or whatever it might be. So do you think that's also useful to sort of break it up so that you've got a set amount of time and then you reward yourself in some way?
I always had a day where I didn't do any revision because you don't want to sort of do too much. And I included kind of breaks, so that, you know, I've done two subjects, so I'm now going to have a break. I'm not doing anything for a little while. I think that's the important thing, is being realistic. It is, you know, not saying I'm going to do sort of too much, because it won't happen, and then, you know, you're sort of less likely to actually do anything, I think.
I mean, I also think I kind of found this a little later, but being outside, I mean, obviously, you know, it's Britain, so it does get quite cold very often, but when we were out of school, especially because, you know, your child breaks up a little earlier for their exams, just getting outside, and, you know, I had this one day, and I still remember it, where I just was like, you know what, Mum, I'm just going to take a picnic by myself. So I got a couple snacks with me, brought my little drink with me, brought all my books with me, very heavy bag, just kind of saying, brought it to the middle of some random park, put my blanket out, and I just lay there, and I revised, and the time actually went by a lot quicker, because I wasn't realising just how much time I'd actually spent revising, because I was just thinking about, wow, it's such a lovely nice day today. And I can actually focus because, you know, I'm seeing stuff in natural light and not just with, you know, my bedroom light on. And it kind of just helped me relax and kind of think about other things. And then when I took my breaks in between, I could kind of be like, wow, this fresh air is really nice. And it kind of just makes making a day out of revision, which I know sounds insane because even though I don't really like to revise, I'm not going to say I'm lying to you. But it kind of just makes it feel more like a positive thing. Like, I can use this as an excuse to be outside and to, you know, maybe see my friends once in a while, you know. And another question was, how do you revise with friends? Now, me personally, I didn't really revise with my friends because I found that I actually preferred to revising by myself. But in those instances where I felt like, wow, I really do need someone to revise with, you know, just putting, you see those YouTube videos where it's just like, revise with me. And it's just some random person, you know, you can't even see their face, and they're just highlighting a bunch of stuff, and they're doing all this work, and they kind of give you a timer within the video, so kind of looking for those particular videos. And it almost encouraged me to do my revision, because I'm like, if this person can do it, why can't I? You know, and it kind of just makes you think about kind of, well, whether it's, if, you know, that person can do it, why can't I? And it kind of helps you get through that in the end. Because then you go, wow, this actually really helped me because I managed to get through all this stuff. And, you know, you kind of thank that person. You're just like, thank you for advising me on this random particular day that could have been like 10 years ago. You know, but it kind of does make you feel like you're in this with someone else, which, of course, you know, they're in this with all their classmates, but, you know, people revise in kind of different ways.
So is that a thing? You type into YouTube, revise with me?
Yeah. It is genuinely a thing because I now do it all the time because, you know, in those, you know, sitting at my desk because, and I also feel like, even if you can't move your desk out of the room or into somewhere else, kind of placing it away from your bed so you're actually staring at some random wall in your bedroom, and kind of making that kind of area into like a revision area. you know, and it kind of makes it seem more appealing. But, you know, the thing with Revise With Me is a real thing. And I don't know who is behind that camera, but it kind of just makes, like I said, encourages you to revise. Because it makes you feel like you've just got a little friend with you.
One thing that worked for my Year 11s last year is if they had it in their bedroom, and obviously not everyone can move their stuff out, they put a bed sheet over it at the end of the revision session, and there was something quite cathartic about going, right, you're done for the day, and it still becomes like then a bedroom rather than, you know, a bed next to your work, highly so pressured centre, you know. So it's always, I mean, it's all quack psychology, isn't it? But it seemed to work well.
Can I just ask the youngsters, what did you find was the most helpful thing your parents did? Because, you know, I've gone through so many different roles, good cop, bad cop, taking a complete step back, threats, bribery. This was last year, but what did you find was the most positive thing they did for you?
I think just knowing that my mum was supporting me, because my mum is not a native English speaker, but even with that, I could kind of tell that she wanted to help me, but she wanted to know how to help me. So there was times where she was like, no, you have to revise now, you've got to do this now. But it's kind of like when someone forces you to do something, you no longer want to do it anymore.
So she wasn't heavy-handed?
No, she wasn't. Towards the end, she did kind of let me have the reins to do my own revision. And then if she saw me slacking or, you know, going too many days without looking at me, she'd be like, oh, how about we kind of, you know, sit together and maybe you can explain this to me? And I knew she didn't understand what I was going on now. But it's kind of just that you can teach someone else. And if my mum can understand it, I'm sure the examiners can, you know, but kind of just taking that gentle encouragement. And it's not just leading with a heavy hand, because maybe that works for some kids, but I feel like nowadays it's more like children are more independent and they want to be more independent. So I think just kind of holding your child's hand, really, and being like, you know, we can do this together. It's, you know, like Miss Les always says, it's a marathon, not a sprint, you know. We can do this, just explain it to me, you know, kind of. And if she could see that I was getting a bit too overwhelmed, she would be like, okay, you know what, let's just take a break for now. Let's take a 10-minute break. We can do something fun. We can, you know, think about ideas for dinner and kind of distracting you for a little bit so you're not thinking about it all the time. Because, you know, you come into school and they're like, your GCSEs are in 3 weeks, you know, but then you go home and it's like your parents are just like, you know, your GCSEs are in 3 weeks, and it just feels too much. But if your parent is there and they're like, you know what, your GCSEs are in 3 weeks, but it's okay because you still have 3 weeks to go until you need to sit that first paper, and we can make the most out of that, and we can do something fun in between, you know. Kind of just, like I said, just holding your child's hand instead of, yeah, and trusting them that they will do the right thing, because I'm sure your child will do the right thing and revise and, you know, do everything that they need to. But it's just not being an authoritarian and more just being just like, I'm here and I'm, you know, willing to help you with whatever you need, you know. Don't tell me, you're like, tell me what to do, not let me tell you what to do. Because it kind of gives them that, like, I am in control.
Do you guys agree with that or different approach?
No, I think that's the right idea. The main sort of thing I said to my parents is, you know, I'm the one who's going to have to do the revision. Don't bother kind of advising with me, but just like let me off of housework now. You know, I'm not doing, you know, like, I'm not helping with cooking. I'm not helping with, you know, please do the washing up. I'm not going to do that. Let me get on with the revision, and you get on with the other stuff. That was sort of the main thing I've said.
I think it's hard because I would say you three are fairly self-motivated, so that's the other thing, isn't it? It's maybe a different story.
Yeah.
Would you say that rewards thing, though, is a good way if you aren't motivated to be like breaking it, chunking it, so we've got X amount of time and then...
I think, because back in year 11, year 10, I wasn't going past second.
Okay.
But kind of just my mum would always try and distract me with something if she could see that I was having some trouble, because, you know, she understands, you know, hardships, and, you know, she knows best how to overcome them, really. And she was just kind of there for me, and I think I really did appreciate that, because I knew she, like I said, I knew she didn't really understand what I was going on now, but she kind of understood this is just a stepping stone to where you need to be. And then you have, you know, the next 2 years where if your child is doing the IB, they're focusing on the IBD, UCD, bespoke, whatever. And then you get to that next place. And it's all just about, like Laura said, these exams are just a means to an end. Because Maybe your child doesn't like chemistry or English, you know, but after that exam is done, they can be like, you know what, I don't want to do English anymore. Mm. And that's completely fine because they have that GCSE now. And they can say, well, I've actually done the GCSE and I've got another 6, 7, 8, whatever. You know, and it makes them feel better about themselves. You know, and if your parent, you know, you as parents, can kind of be with your child on that result, say, see, look, you did good. Now you can take this into anything you want to. Now you can do whatever you want to. You know, but kind of just encouraging them that the world will not fall apart. Okay, it is okay. There will not be kind of like a explosion if you do not do this, but you know, it's better to do it, you know, and just kind of running with them really on the ways.
I'm very conscious of the time. You've given up a really precious part in the middle of the day, and I'm sure you're quite hungry. Is there any questions? Please, this is the time. We're all here. We'll be as honest as we possibly can. Well, we'll be completely.
I'm really sorry. Can I just jump in quickly? Because what I would like to say before we do the questions is when the exams are, just so that you... So we've got literature and a literature paper 1 and 2 and language paper 1 before May half term. So Lit 1 is on the 13th of May. Lit 2 is on the 20th of May. And language paper 1 is on the 23rd of May. So that's the 13th, the 20th for literature. And language paper 1 is on the 23rd of May. Now, this kind of works in our favour because language paper 2, I can send this, I'll send this out over email to everyone as well, don't worry. But what I did want to say is it works in our favour because language paper 2 is where students generally don't perform as well. You can't draft the persuasive writing like you can the creative writing. You've got 2 extracts, so on and so forth. And because that's after half term, we'll run sessions during half term to focus on language paper 2. So it means that they'll have got arguably the easier parts out of the way and can then have some really focused revision in half term for paper 2. Yeah, so it's the 9th of June. So I think that's the Thursday after half term.
When do they go on study leave?
They will stay with us until half term. So then after that point, they're on study leave, that's right, isn't it?
So you'll be doing extra classes if they can come in?
Yes, exactly.
Is that during the half term holiday?
The extra classes, yes. So during the half term, we'll run sessions, and those will be specifically focused on paper 2 language because of the way that the exams fall.
Do you want any incentives for
that? Oh, I mean, in terms of it, we can provide some biscuits. But beyond that, really, we'll obviously target the students that we know really should be attending, and they'll be told with plenty of notice that we'd like them to be there. But yes, really, by that point, we'd hope that it's for the good of their exams that they know they're getting that extra help from us. Mm. So sorry that I cut in, but okay. I thought it was important, for us to understand what we're looking at in terms of timings.
Do you have any questions? Is there anything that you...
Podcasts and things like that, are there any, you know, thinking of podcasts for some of the literature texts?
Yeah.
Are there any...
Frank Skinner's poetry podcast is very good, and he covers not all but a lot of the power and conflict poetry on that. He's really entertaining to listen to. I've even used it in class for a cover lesson, and the students really enjoyed it. So Frank Skinner's poetry podcast, aside from that, is a very good question. I actually don't know where to direct you for
In Our Time with Melvin Bragg, you know, on Radio 4. He does... I'm not sure whether he does much to do specifically, but he does the Shakespearean comedies, which is really important for conventions. He does Christmas Carol. I don't think he does doing spectacles, but that's a really nice sort of in-depth. If your child is sitting on a 7 and wants a 9, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for a student that's sitting on a 5, because obviously it's 4 academics talking university-level qualifications. But it's really nice to have it on in the car or in the background, just for some sort of useful nuggets, I'd say. Anything else? Thank you so much for coming.
Did you start work on the creative writing piece?
Yes, so it's every class teacher will have started it. Not every class teacher will have finished it, but they will be finishing it in the next fortnight, ready to start revision. So most students should now be at the point where they've got an almost finished draft for the creative writing. And then, as I think you were saying, Sophia, that's when we'll start that process of getting them to practice applying it to the different exam questions and tweaking it to make it work once they've got their completed draft done.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Please do take all of the things that you possibly can.
So we've got sheets.